Today is Friday, October the 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Congress on Thursday approved a measure to fund the government, avoiding a shutdown that was set to occur after midnight. And a French court has sentenced former President Nicolas Sarkozy to 1 year in prison after finding him guilty of illegal campaign financing during his 2012 re-election campaign.
Sarkozy was accused of enormous overspending on campaign publicity, campaigning in general, for his 2012 failed bid.
And UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says that he's shocked by the decision of the Ethiopian government to expel senior UN humanitarian officials from the country.
So in essence, you're punishing a whole series of different populations across the country who are in desperate need of humanitarian assistance by taking these actors off the field.
And the number of people living in poverty in the United States dropped to a record low last year following the government relief programs to offset economic downturn caused by the coronavirus pandemic. We'll have this story and more coming up right here on International Edition. Stay tuned. Congress on Thursday approved a measure to fund the government into early December, avoiding a shutdown that was set to occur after midnight. However, President Joe Biden's agenda is still on the line as the House of Representatives prepares a vote on the $1 trillion infrastructure bill. Some progressive Democrats have vowed to vote against the bill unless there is also a deal on a larger social spending plan. Speaking to reporters, House Progressive Caucus Chair Pramila Jayapal says progressives are willing to stay in Washington to get the bills done.
Look, we are in the same place we've always been. We put out an offer for $3.5 trillion, and it has all of our legislative language, and in fact, 96% of Democrats in the House and the Senate support that number.
Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar says progressives are not getting in the way of achieving President Biden's top priorities.
This is not a progressive agenda. We are fighting for the Build Back Better agenda, which is the president's agenda.
And House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says that budget talks are on the right path as she works to bring the two sides together to secure enough votes to pass the bipartisan infrastructure bill.
I do not plan on not doing anything. I plan on moving forward in a positive way, and everybody has to think this is the path we're on. It's not a fork in the road, maybe here, maybe there. It's a path that we're on.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says that he was shocked by the government of Ethiopia's decision to expel seven senior United Nations officials just 2 days after UN Aid Chief Martin Griffiths said that hundreds of thousands of people in the northern region of Tigray were likely experiencing famine. The seven, who include the head of UNICEF and the head of the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, were given 72 hours to leave the country for, quote, meddling in the internal affairs of the country. The White House condemned the move by the Ethiopian government.
The U.S. government condemns in the strongest possible terms the government of Ethiopia's unprecedented action to expel the leadership of all of the United Nations organizations involved in ongoing humanitarian operations. We agree with U.N. leaders. This is a stain on our collective conscience, and it must stop. The action follows the release of reports warning that hundreds of thousands of people are starving to death in northern Ethiopia. We're deeply concerned that this action continues a pattern by the Ethiopian government of obstructing the delivery of food, medicine, and other life-saving supplies to those most in need. We call on the UN Security Council and members of the international community to take urgent action to make clear to the government of Ethiopia that impeding humanitarian operations and depriving your own citizens of the basic means of survival is unacceptable. President Biden signed an executive order earlier this month enabling the U.S. government to impose financial sanctions on those prolonging the conflict in northern Ethiopia. We will not hesitate to use this or any other tool at our disposal to respond quickly and decisively to those who obstruct humanitarian assistance to the people of Ethiopia.
That was White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. Refugees International has been calling for more humanitarian aid to the region. It released a statement condemning the Ethiopian government's decision, saying that it would leave key posts vacant during a time of crisis. Hadin Lang is the vice president of Refugees International, and he joins me via phone.
Jackson, we're very concerned by this announcement. This is coming, the expulsion of senior UN humanitarian leaders are happening as the situation in Tigray goes from bad to worse. I mean, we're in a situation where massive insecurity, food insecurity is rife, where famine is gathering momentum, and where the humanitarian crisis is spilling over into neighboring regions following the fighting and internal displacement. So this is the absolute wrong time to be expelling some of the humanitarian leaders inside the UN system. And furthermore, we're very concerned that this is happening in response to sort of recent statements by different actors inside the UN beginning to speak out more loudly about the blockade, about the refusal of the Ethiopian government to let humanitarian assistance into Tigray. So this is a very worrying sign that things are headed in the wrong direction.
And how is this announcement likely to affect humanitarian operations in Tigray and other parts of the country?
A couple of the key leaders, they come from OCHA, which is the Humanitarian Coordinator's Office. They also come from UNICEF. The Coordinator's Office helps to lead on all humanitarian efforts, not just in Tigray, but across the country. And UNICEF is performing life-saving actions with respect to children and other very vulnerable populations. So it's a very significant blow to have the leadership removed. At the end of the day, not much aid is getting into Tigray because of the government's blockade. But we need the senior leadership there to be pushing on these issues, to be coordinating with the NGOs, and to be leading the response to the extent that it's possible. It also impacts the humanitarian situation in Afar and other neighboring regions where fighting has displaced over a million people in recent months. And these are areas that humanitarians can still access. So in essence, you're punishing a whole series of different populations across the country who are in desperate need of humanitarian assistance by taking these actors off the field.
Paddy Lang is the vice president of Refugees International. I reached him via phone in Washington, D.C.
Voice of America!
And a French court has sentenced former President Nicolas Sarkozy to 1 year in prison after finding him guilty of illegal campaign financing during his 2012 re-election campaign. Prosecutors said Sarkozy spent nearly double the amount of money allowed under French law during his 2012 presidential campaign. And for more on the court verdict and Sarkozy's future in French politics, I reached Catherine Field, the reporter and analyst based in Paris.
Sarkozy was accused of enormous overspending on campaign publicity, campaigning in general, for his 2012 failed bid to be re-elected president of France. There is a limit in France of 22 million euros to be spent by each candidate for electioneering. For his 2012 campaign, Nicolas Sarkozy spent 42 million. And most of this was spent on very large razzmatazz type campaigns, rallies with enormous sort of very much American style flags and big screens at very strategic points, for example, in the shadow of the Eiffel Tower. Now, Nicolas Sarkozy denies these allegations. He said that he didn't know there was this overspending. He was so busy running the country at the time that there was no way that he could know what was going on. Of course, the judge rejected that and said, if you didn't know, you should have known.
Now, Catherine, was Sarkozy in court during trial and sentencing, and will he actually be serving any jail time?
He was not in court today for the verdict. He said through his lawyers that he was going to appeal this judgment. The judge has said that he will need to spend a year in custody. Now, it's been arranged that if he does eventually spend that year in custody, it will be under house arrest. He will have an electronic bracelet. But essentially, since the verdict came down, that pretty much everyone from his own party, the big heavyweights, have come out in support of Nicolas Sarkozy, saying that they feel that this is a miscarriage of justice and that this is some sort of judicial persecution, is what one of his allies described it as.
And what about his co-accused? What is their fate?
Indeed, there were 13 defendants in this case. I mean, not all of them were political appointees. Some of them were people who were working in this fake PR company that was set up to try and play around with the invoices. The allegation is that these invoices were fake or that there were much less than actual money spent. So they've all been found guilty, some to greater or lesser degree. Some of them will appeal. They've already said their appeal. Others have just said they'll do their time, whether it be under house arrest or a suspended sentence, because they just want to move on with their lives.
Now, what kind of political influence or political clout does former President Sarkozy have in French politics right now?
At the moment, he has a lot of clout because next year there's going to be presidential elections. And even though Nicolas Sarkozy can't stand, what is happening is that all those who are trying, rallying around to become the party's candidate for the presidential elections, they are looking for Sarkozy's blessing, if you like, that he will come out in favor of them. So at the moment, he's very influential. He's very much the man that everyone goes to for their blessing. But I think once you get past that era where we have primaries and they decide who is going to stand for the election, you might well see Nicolas Sarkozy falling away a bit into the background.
Now, is this case the end to Sarkozy's legal issues?
No, far from it. In fact, he's still got an appeal pending for a 3-year jail term, two of those suspended that he received earlier this year, in March of this year. That was for corruption and influence peddling. And there's still the case to come before the courts, the allegation that for his initial presidential campaign, the successful 2007 campaign, that he received funding from then Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. So that's still going through. Gaddafi, of course, was quite well in with Sarkozy, but we don't know if any money actually changed hands. For his part, Nicolas Sarkozy has said, well, on that one as well, he said it's all a political vendetta against him.
That was Catherine Field. I reached her in the French capital, Paris. The number of people living in poverty in the United States dropped to a record low last year following government relief programs to offset the economic downturn caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Struggling families have been kept afloat because of the government lifelines, as VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports.
I purchased uniform shorts, shirt, shoes, belt, and pants.
Natalia Walker's family is one of more than 30 million American households receiving a monthly expanded child tax credit. The single mother of two has been spending the $300 a month of direct payments for school supplies.
It was a blessing because I wasn't expecting it.
Last year, COVID-19 forced Walker to close her cleaning business. She worked whenever she could and relied on local charities and federal income support, such as the stimulus checks, aimed at helping struggling households during the pandemic.
Well, of course, I put some in the savings. I had started, putting more into my business, and then I had started another business for my oldest son, so I was just pretty much investing in my boys.
New data from the U.S. Census Bureau, analyzed by several researchers, show Natalia's family hasn't been the only one benefiting from a series of recent economic relief measures. The Census Bureau found the poverty rate fell to 9.1% from 11.8% in 2019. 11.7 million Americans would have been counted as poor in 2020, if not for the stimulus payments. Renee Reberg is a research scientist with the nonprofit group Child Trends.
It was about a million white children protected from poverty. Without the stimulus payments, the poverty rate for Latino and Black children would have been 6.8 percentage points higher than it was with the payments.
Christopher Weimer is the co-director of the Center on Poverty and Social Policy at Columbia University.
In terms of the full anti-poverty effect of the child tax credit under the expansion, that won't be seen actually till 2021. Right now, it seems to have reduced poverty by about a quarter, about 25%.
While the delivery of stimulus checks has ceased, there's a debate in Congress over whether to extend the child tax credit, under which parameters and for how long. Poverty studies expert Angela Rashidi worries that the tax credit will take away the incentive for people to work. She also is bothered by the program's large price tag.
The cost of expanding this tax credit to households with children is over $100 billion a year. I think the real question is, how do we continue those type of safety net programs that help people, but also ensure that they are able to make success for their own families?
Nobody's getting rich off of the child tax credit.
Jennifer Lassiter-Smith is the director for U.S. programs for InMed, a humanitarian development organization serving over 7,000 low-income families in Northern Virginia.
It's a fallacy, I think, to think that there's this mass horde of people that are sucking off the government dime. One thing I've seen during the pandemic is sometimes you just need a little bit. We can give someone $500 to help with rental assistance, and that's the difference between their family becoming homeless. And when that happens, it's a terrible slide. You know, so helping people maintain the level is just the best thing that we can do.
Natalia Walker says she is determined to continue working hard to keep her family out of poverty. She receives different levels of support from the local nonprofit Lift DC. But she would also welcome having continuous access to enhanced government aid, including the expanded child tax credit, so she can invest in her son's future.
I don't live beyond my means. Anything that I pretty much have got, I've either worked for it, or I found a resource, or I got it for free. So I utilize every resource that comes my way for me and my family. So I hope and pray that it will last up until 2025, if not permanent.
Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Washington.
There's a fresh sign that the Delta variant of the coronavirus may be slowing the recovery in the job market. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has more.
The number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits has risen for the third straight week. The Labor Department says claims were up by 11,000 last week to 362,000. Since topping 900,000 in early January, applications have mostly fallen steadily as the economy bounces back from last year's shutdowns. But they've risen recently along with the rise in coronavirus cases, and the numbers remain elevated historically. Before the pandemic hit the U.S. hard in March 2020, they were typically coming in around 220,000 a week. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Protesters around the world marked International Safe Abortion Day this week as high-profile cases in the United States and Latin America once again focused attention on the debate over reproductive rights. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports on the fight over a Texas abortion law that has reached Capitol Hill.
International Safe Abortion Day marked this week by protesters on the streets of Mexico, where there's an ongoing fight over a local law criminalizing abortion. And in Chile, where the state legislature is taking steps to legalize abortion up to 14 weeks of pregnancy. And in the United States, a new high-profile law taking effect just weeks ago in the state of Texas, preventing access to abortions after cardiac activity is detected in the fetus around the sixth week of pregnancy. The law also financially rewards private citizens who sue those they believed have helped women access abortions. Senate Republicans say U.S. abortion laws stand out on the global stage. Republican Senator John Cornyn.
The U.S., of course, is currently an outlier in the international community. We are ranked right up there with North Korea and China as one of the most permissive countries in the world when it comes to elective abortions, because abortion advocates deny the humanity of unborn, innocent life.
Access to abortion has been a constitutional right since the Supreme Court ruled on the landmark Roe v. Wade case in 1973. Since then, pro-choice supporters say state laws have chipped away at that right. Texas Democratic Representative Donna Howard.
This is about personal freedom and respecting that women know what is best for them, their family, and their destinies. This is about health care and trust in the doctor-patient relationship. This is about giving women control over their very lives.
The U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear a challenge to the Texas law, leading some legal experts to say it set a dangerous precedent. University of Texas law professor Steve Laddick.
The Constitution creates an independent federal judiciary. And yet too many people who ought to know better have no problem with what Texas has done or throw their hands up simply because they think that Roe and Casey were wrongly decided. The mindset appears to be that the ends justify the means.
One of the nation's most heated policy debates goes beyond politics for both sides.
Let's not dress this up in clinical terms that make it sound like something that it is not. We are talking about the taking of unborn human life, innocent life, life of a being that has a right to exist.
House Democrats pushed back against the Texas law earlier this month, passing a bill guaranteeing a woman's right to abortion. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
This issue is one that is so personal that it should be intruded upon by any governmental institution.
But Republicans have the numbers in the U.S. Senate to prevent that bill from becoming law. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Voice of America.
A new national survey conducted by the Eurasia Group Foundation finds that most Americans say they want more diplomacy and fewer U.S. military deployments around the world. The findings come in the first large-scale opinion poll conducted since the end of the 20-year U.S. involvement in Afghanistan. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
With the last U.S. troops leaving Afghanistan in August after 20 years, President Joe Biden told the United Nations that the United States is pivoting from an era of relentless war to an era of relentless diplomacy. A new national survey of 2,000 U.S. voters finds that most Americans appear to agree. A majority of those polled by the Eurasia Group Foundation want to decrease the number of U.S. troops stationed overseas and reduce security commitments abroad, while 58% say they want to increase U.S. diplomatic engagement. Caroline Gray is a lead researcher on the survey.
And we found that 62%, quite a large majority, thought that the biggest lessons from the war was that the United States should not be in the business of nation building, or that it should only send troops into harm's way if vital national interests are threatened.
The report notes among younger voters, ages 18 to 29, 80% believe that unless the United States is under attack, the president should be required to seek congressional approval before ordering military action overseas. Again, Caroline Gray spoke to VOA.
65% of younger Americans want to revive nuclear negotiations with Iran. They're more skeptical of America increasing its military presence in East Asia to counter a rising China. And a majority of them also want to scale back U.S. defense spending. So they're a lot more likely than their older counterparts to want to scale back America's military posture and reliance on the military in solving global challenges.
Americans appear divided on the best approach to China and Russia, according to the survey, with 40% saying they are unsure about what the U.S. should do if China were to invade Taiwan. This appears to contrast with what one expert said is the bipartisan consensus among U.S. foreign policy leaders. Christopher Scaluba is with the Atlantic Council.
I think in the security realm, Washington, D.C., as you well know, is obsessed with China as a rising competitor. The president himself has talked very often about this era that we're moving in, an era of great power competition, an era of democracy versus autocracy, and a real concern that China as an autocracy that has a lot of resources and a clear plan and intentionality to dominate kind of the global discussion.
The survey found that humanitarian aid, disaster relief, and COVID-19 relief are the most popular types of international assistance, while military assistance and weapons sales are the least popular. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
And in other news, more than 2,000 British gas stations were still dry on Thursday due to a shortage of truck drivers, which was starting to disrupt deliveries to pharmacies, while farmers warned a lack of butchers could lead to a massive corral of pigs. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Jackson Bunganyi. Bursts of powerful gamma rays are produced when a star dies in a supernova. Scientists have detected the shortest burst on record. Rick Pantaloia explains in this edition of Science in a Minute.
This is Science in a Minute.
Last August 26th, a pulse of powerful gamma radiation was detected by NASA's Fermi Gamma Ray Space Telescope. It turns out it only lasted for about 1 second and is the shortest gamma ray burst spotted to date. The researchers say the quick pulse had been heading toward our planet for 6.6 billion years, almost half the age of the universe. Gamma rays are released by a supernova, which is the explosive death of a massive star. They are said to have the smallest wavelength on the electromagnetic spectrum and produce the highest energy among all forms of light. Gamma rays produced within 6,000 light years away could mean serious trouble if it were to hit Earth, but since this burst took place billions of light years away, no noticeable effect was reported. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies is appealing for $24 million to prepare for the potential outflow of tens of thousands of Afghan refugees into neighboring countries in the coming months. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The anticipated exodus of refugees following the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan in mid-August has not happened. Although internal displacement is rife, the UN Refugee Agency reports just over 30,000 people have fled across borders in search of international protection since January. However, the International Red Cross Federation says it expects refugee numbers to surge as humanitarian and economic conditions in Afghanistan worsen. Red Cross spokeswoman Nathalie Perroux tells VOA Afghanistan is in the grips of multiple complex emergencies. She says millions of people are suffering from severe drought, food and water shortages, internal displacement, the COVID-19 pandemic, and a shattered economy. A major problem, she says, is access to banking services.
We have reports of people really queuing very, very long hours to just access cash flow. And the maximum that they can withdraw is $200 per week. So that means that people are really out of cash and that their basic needs may not be met in the immediate future.
The Red Cross reports 18 million people lack basic services and urgently need humanitarian aid to survive. It warns Afghanistan's looming harsh winter threatens greater misery and hardship. Peru says this grim situation is likely to send tens of thousands of Afghans fleeing into neighboring countries in the coming months with the protection and humanitarian assistance they need.
So the current situation in Afghanistan is quite alarming, and that's why we are getting ready for even the worst scenario. That displacement or refugee situation may not happen, but we rather be prepared now rather than, you know, wait for this massive population of movement to happen and not know how to deal with it.
The Red Cross says it requires $24 million to provide aid and protection to about 160,000 Afghan refugees for an initial 12-month period. It says it will focus most of its efforts on Iran, Pakistan, and Tajikistan, but adds preparations could be extended to other countries of asylum in Central Asia. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great weekend.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water, or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public